Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Chris Patillo and Adam Burt. Chris and Adam are the owners of Wichita Falls, Texas Hemp Company. Thanks for joining us today, Chris and Adam.
Howdy. Thanks for having us.
Pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure. Yeah, you know, that's a little mouthful there. Wichita Falls, Texas Hemp Company.
Well, it's WFTHC. All the THC is
in your name. Very clever. Very, very clever. I like that. Very good.
Well, that's where we're at.
Happens all the time. I see names, and then I'm like, oh, they're saying it's CBD. Oh, it's THC. That's very cute, you know? So cool. Usually I ask, right? I ask right away. I say, you know, let our listeners know where you're based out of today, because I think it's super important to know where you're at, what's going on there. But it's right there in the name. You're based in Texas, the Wichita Falls Hemp Company.
Cool. We take a lot of pride in bringing hemp to Texas as it comes online with HB 1325 that got passed. And before that, the Farm Bill just really opened up a lot of doors for us. And we're excited to get started.
Amazing. Yeah, and definitely, you know, I think, you know, every place has a different feel, right? And, you know, I know people in Indiana have had their struggles. You know, talking to people in Illinois, they're all ecstatic. Everything's legal now, recreational, right? I have a somebody that I work with in Alabama, Canabama. Shout out to Jennifer Boozer, amazing. And, you know, people in Atlanta, Georgia, people all over the place. But everybody has a different kind of feel of what's going on. People in Arizona, every single state's so different, even though obviously hemp is legal nationally right now because of the 2018 Farm Bill. But
50 states.
Yeah, amazing. You know, so, but it doesn't mean that every state treats it the same, correct?
Right. So it depends on where you're located and how you can find avenues through to the federal government at this point in time. It's kind of a catch-22. They ruled it as an agricultural crop, but they're not treating it as such, which leads to a vast confusion.
Exactly. So tell me, how's the scene there in Texas? Tell me how you guys are able to help people there in Texas and kind of the feeling, you know, the stigma and excitement, not excitement, all that fun stuff.
It is a weird minutia of there's a lot of strong feelings going a lot of strong ways. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there's a lot of misinformation being thrown back and forth. However, we now live in an age where we can continue to find out what the accurate information is. And turns out a lot of that prohibition stuff was just that. Fluff.
A lot of bullshit.
Well, there's a lot of it. But unfortunately, at this point in time, what we're looking at is lack of clarity in the market. And whenever you don't have clarity, you don't see the market moving as full speed as it could. Uh-huh. So the industry in Texas is rather excited. I mean, Texas Hemp Convention, there was a turnout of more than 10,000 people. You know, farmers, processors, individuals alike. But the, you know, caveat there is we are all kind of in the wind. You know, we went down to Waco and heard Sid Miller and the Texas Department of Agriculture. You know, they heard a public forum. But as far as clearing the way, USDA said they approved House Bill 1325, but that doesn't give us clear indications as to how the farmer should proceed forward. They indicated, you know, pricing as far as how we're going to have to pay for licensing. And if we move the crop across our acreage or onto a storing facility, you know, but other than that, it's just, okay, so we have to pay to move it 10 feet. It's kind of egregious in lots of aspects, but as far as, clarity on, you know, large scale agriculture, we're kind of still in the dark. They indicated that they'd be very advantageous or desirous to have some of these bigger players come in and they would have special treatment. But other than that, you know, the small guy is the one kind of lacking clarity, which provides a plethora of headaches.
We're also running into the problem with processing. They haven't come out with any rules or anything for us to be able to do processing. So we're supposed to have licensing for these farmers coming up in March. However, if I can't put together a processing facility in 90 days. And that's when that crop's going to be ready to go somewhere. So now the further south you go now has a much more elevated shipping costs because we're not allowed to execute yet.
Right. And they're also prohibiting Texas from processing or manufacturing flour goods.
Really?
There is some, June 10th, Abbott signed the farm bill, or acquiescence to the farm bill, Texas's plan. June 11th, they instituted a ban on smokable growing and manufacturing, which is curious. You know, they have already set precedent in the federal courts where they cannot ban the sale of hemp goods. So that's going to be an interesting precedent that'll be set here in Texas. However, our plan locally, as we're up near the border, you know, we'll just hawk off the flour, ship across the border as biomass, and what do you know? You know, finalized good. But this isn't novel. There are many people who are approaching this idea, and Texas is going to lose a large portion of that GDP if we don't keep our eyes open.
And it's definitely such a hard place to navigate in. And I know, and I want to get into obviously talking about what you guys are doing there at Wichita Falls to help other farmers to navigate through this, because it's not easy, like you said. And there's definitely different many techniques, and you got to be smart about it, obviously. But you know, and I also want to talk about navigating into this space in general, and I want to hear about your background and your history on this, but. Before we move on from Texas, you know, I think something that's always interesting to me anyways, I hope other people are interested in too, is every culture is different, right? In different states. I'm from LA, right? Grew up on weed, grew up on medical marijuana, no problems here, right? I love that it's kind of out here in the open, and now I can talk about what I've been doing kind of for the last 17 years and not having to hide anymore. But talk about your experience there in Texas, you know, in terms of, you know, obviously it's a whole different thing, right? The stigma associated with it. Obviously there's lack of education everywhere in terms of cannabis, but, you know, kind of there in Texas, you know, talking to another one, someone else, and, you know, she's talking about how when she started in the industry, people wouldn't look her in the eye, right? Or people started talking about behind her back and all that kind of stuff. So how do you consolidate, you know, between the stigma and kind of being there in the Bible Belt, and, you know, is God affirming people as well, yourself, you know, kind of bringing it all in and having one happy, you know, force coming through as opposed to having to kind of pussyfoot around, so to speak?
Well, there's definitely a lot more of it that's being pushed to the forefront. You were talking about you're from LA. Well, we have more CBD billboards around Texas than all of California. Mm-hmm. Like, they are pushing this. So there's that's also creating a sense of normalcy. But over 91% of America is actually pushing for full legalization of the plant. Now, here in Texas, we're working on more of a fiber-based or more of a different cannabinoid, because we have to follow protocol of that 0.3% THC or less. So this is what is being offered to us. We are absolutely willing to take it, because the things that we can make with just this alone are astronomical and helps the finish line goods.
Yeah. Now it gets us excited because, you know, they give us an inch, we're going to take a mile. We're going to showcase the opportunity with this cannabinoid. I mean, one way to look at it is just, you know, healthcare. You know, 1 out of 4 healthcare dollars is spent on diabetes. Which mostly is preventable. Type 2 is. Type 1, right, you're born with it. But what we're looking at here is a differentiation in diet that drastically alters the implications of where our healthcare dollars are spent and the efficacy available for them. And in doing so, we provide for a higher quality of life. You know, there are guys just in our local hometown that have been, you know, suffering from seizures or any number of other medical conditions that these cannabinoids that are now available dramatically impact. You know, personally, I suffered from a car wreck about 10 years ago, and I had back surgery, and it helped some. But the cannabinoids themselves have prevented from relapsing in seizures or any other complications that arose from that. So personally, I know the effect that these have. And we have several guys and gals in town who have started using it, have gotten off prescriptions, who have shifted their style of life. And, you know, each their own. We all have individual endocannabinoid systems. And, you know, that people are, the stigma is getting removed through proliferation of information. We are looking at, you know, mammalian species in general through breast milk, they release cannabinoids. And so once we start getting a kind of a foundational understanding across the board, we're seeing the people are apt to take up the charge. Farmers are coming out of the woodwork, people who have acreage, people who are interested in retailing, people who want to be processing. You know, Texas is one of the world's largest economies by itself. Uh-huh. So our opportunity here is staggering. And all we want to do is enable, you know, these guys who are pursuing the opportunity to do so effectively with accurate information.
Incredible, definitely. And you know, talk about the accurate information. And, you know, it's not an easy place to navigate in, you know, talking about you. And Adam, you talked about a little bit about the car accident and how you saw benefits from this. And, you know, it's not an easy place to navigate in the first place and to learn about it, and let alone to start giving it over to other people and helping other people navigate through it. So I'd love to hear your background, both your stories. You know, how did you get into the industry in the first place? And how'd you go about, you know, navigating through in the first place? You know, did have mentors or, you know, bring me back and bring us all down.
All right. So I started in Garland, Texas, which is Northeast Dallas. And I found the Lord and found my wife in Wichita Falls, Texas. And so when we came back, that's where we had to kind of start and kick off everything. And that's also partially why the company is named that. Now, my personal experience, we spent 5 years on the road after we left out of here, traveling the West Coast, going to the East Coast, back and forth, learning all the different sides of this plant. I worked in the processing facilities. I worked on the farms. I just became so passionate and wanting to learn. And schooling never really was for me. I like getting hit in the face with it and thrown into the mix and, well, we'll figure it out. That's been a passion of mine. And that I just jumped in and did it. So this past October, but the previous one, we brought in 14,000 plants with 11 of us. And I was just absolutely shocked at the amount of pile that made. But then I saw all of the other farmers around us, Southern Oregon, and just what this kind of could become when we actually start to take this material and start to think of it more as salt than we do think of it as taboo. Uh-huh. This is just something that is a part of our diet, something that gets instituted, implemented. We can put it in our walls. We can put it all these other different places. But the point is it's going to bring the price points of all of these everyday materials in our lives. So that way we can actually maintain the consumeristic mentality that we've already come accustomed to. Just things last longer and are healthy for you.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, that's
good. So to add on there, go ahead.
Oh, you go ahead. I want to hear your story. I got plenty to talk about. Trust me, I can go for days. You know.
Ah, my man. No, that's what I am like when I get on fiber. So Chris came to me and said, "Hey, there's somebody in town who's doing a town hall meeting. We're gonna grow hemp." And we're both like, "Oh yeah, hell yeah, let's do that." We show up and we start talking with the guys there, and he's talking about offering the farmer $750 an acre. Which we felt at the time was a little on the low end, especially when you take into account the market of 2018.
Yeah.
Just a tad. We feel that everyone should be paid according to their sweat equity. So if you're able to produce a crop that's worth $10,000, why wouldn't you be paid the same as someone who's able to produce a crop that's worth $40,000? You know, that's just egregious with all the crop, you know, profit being consolidated at the top. So as Chris has preferred to kind of run into things full force, I prefer to kind of take a mind's eye and look at it a little bit longer. I spent about 9 years in school. And when I met Chris, I was about year five in. We met at church. And, you know, the opportunities that this crop presents has been in the background of my mind the whole time through. I majored in international studies, political science, with my minor in economics. So I was trying to figure out why people did things and how. And, you know, you see this crop providing the opportunities, as Marx put it, for a vast distribution of capital production. And in doing so, it reverses time, essentially, as far as economic sequestration into the higher echelons. This reverses that process and distributes in a decentralized manner. The power, if you will, the ability to influence others. And if we can influence others in any way, it should be to enable your brother. And that's what this crop does through and through.
Well, very good. I love you guys compliment each other, right? I mean, I'm more like Chris, right? Jump in, we'll figure shit out. You know, you jump out
the plane, we'll get there.
Jump out the plane, we'll build a parachute on the way down, you know, kind of thing, you know? But definitely, you know, you guys compliment each other in terms of, Adam, you seem like you're more do your due diligence and more ground in that sense. And Chris is like, let's go, baby. We're ready, you know, and
get on it.
That because when I see partners, I see people who work together and they're basically got the same talents and strengths and everything. I'm like, well, what do you guys, you know, what do you need each other for? Right. If you're doing the exact same thing,
you've got right.
mentality, you know, it's just, you guys are really just hyping each other up. Right. But when I see people like you that you have the same goals, the same vision and different ways of approaching it. That's when, for me, that's exciting in entrepreneurship.
Well, what we love about this crop is, you know, Chris is fond of saying it's going to take a village to raise this industry. And I'm more fond of saying it's going to take an army because it's going to take us taking a military approach. We're going to have to be armed. We're going to have to, not just literally, but also figuratively. We're also going to have to take a stance here where we enable our brother and we function as a unit. You know, if we don't, we're going to be overtaken as an industry by some of these bigger players because we do represent a threat to cotton, to pharma. You know, we're talking about big ag. We're talking about petrol in general. If we have the availability to grow fiber in mass, we can get off the petrol paradigm entirely, which, you know, avails us to a much higher quality of life, especially if we're able to distribute the sources of capital production. So that means going to every single acreage that we're able to and ensuring that they're able to produce not just a crop, but a quality crop and having the right mindset, sweat equity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I mean, you kind of hit a lot of stuff on the head right there. Obviously, I think, you know, we talk about stigma. We talk about lack of research. We talk about all kinds of different things that are kind of the symptoms of the main issue. Right, which is the prohibition, which is the fact that this is a huge threat to industries, right? Industries that are long-standing that don't want to give up. You talk about sweat equity; they don't want to give anything up, right? They don't want to give up anything of what they've had going, and they have it going very nicely. And as long as they can keep the people, uneducated and making them believe what they want to believe, yeah, you know, we talk a lot about obviously the medicine side and the pharma side, but I don't think we talk. Even close to enough about the fiber side, right?
Talking about the grain side,
the grain side, the fossil fuel side, talking about the clothes side, talking about everything else. And that's the dangerous part, right? The dangerous part is that you can't really patent, a plant like this, right? You can't really.
BW Pharmaceuticals can, apparently.
Yeah.
They tried to.
Yeah.
But what we're about to see here, guys, is proliferation where we're going to make the medical, the cannabinoids kind of look like small potatoes. You know, we're about to be able to make out of this base material computers that you can wear. We're about to make, you know, electromagnets that'll power the world. And, you know, we're talking about this. People get all, you know, excited and they think that, you know, it's way out of reach. Within the next 3 to 5 years, we are talking about a radical differing approach to every way of life, whether that be from where your goods are produced, how they're produced, or how they're getting shipped. You know, we're talking a radical shift in such a short time. It's what Heigl phrased as the zeitgeist. We're shifting the paradigm. Uh-huh. You know, we are right now in the process of shifting from a petrol paradigm over to a plant-based economy. And that's where sweat equity is going to come in the most advantageous position. Because right now, if you're looking at mechanized approach or robotics or any of these other options, they do not have the efficacy that manpower has. So you're able to put in a single individual on an acre and their ability to increase the efficacy of that singular crop goes up exponentially when compared to machine driven operations. So people are worried about, you know, our jobs and all this nonsense. This crop provides, you know, the option to profitably increase your footprint while simultaneously increasing the amount of labor that you bring on. We're talking, you know, per acre, about half a full-time job. So for every two and change acres, you can employ a full-time job that would include benefits and would include a standard of living at about $45,000 to $50,000 a year minimum. And that's where we start to see a radical shift in the standard of living. And then when we have the opportunity with fiber, as Chris pointed out, with grain, we can increase the food intake, the calories, the quality of those calories. We can increase our food stock for our livestock. And increase their quality of life, which then increases our consumptive behavior and lowers the cost of goods sold.
Right.
So So, you know, you're talking about textiles, you're talking about animal feed, you're talking about biodiesel or hemp-based fuel options. You're talking about plastics created that are biodegradable from this crop, graphene, carbon fiber, manufacturing goods. There is a plethora of opportunity that is beyond the cannabinoid aspect that is largely overlooked. You know, people get hyped on the profitability of the cannabinoids. Before very long, you're going to see a radical shift where this will be treated as a commodity. And in doing so, we will avail ourselves to these opportunities. But if we don't do so with foresight, then we are going to be held by these other operators, these industries that we will be, this crop will invade. And we will be, you know, hogtied effectively by these additional industries, unless we band together and get everyone on the same page singing from the same hymnal. Elsewise, it's going to be a cacophony.
Yeah, I mean, so much stuff to talk about there. But, you know, but it's amazing. What I want to talk about is you know, you're talking about this paradigm shift that's happening, right? Or that needs to happen, right? You know, we look at, you know, we see farmers, and I want to get into how you guys are helping farmers. Obviously, you know, you see farmers who can't move the stuff, right? And people are jumping in droves. Everybody's coming in and betting the farm, and they want to make money now. Right. And then you see that there's even people who are saying, oh, the bubble's popping already and this and that. It's like the bubble hasn't even formed yet. Right. Everybody's already ready to jump off because, like you said, it's all about the cannabinoids and obviously that's super
right.
important. But there's so many other uses that we haven't even been able to even get into tapping into yet. Yeah. You know, so you guys talk about it, you know, look at it like salt. Not taboo, right? Yeah. I mean, multiple times we've talked already here, you know, talking about like corn, and that's not really the way we look at it, right? We don't look at cannabis like this in general, right? We don't look at hemp like this in general. We don't look at the THC side, the other cannabinoids, obviously the CBD, and people talking about, oh, CBD is already over. Now we got to look at the other stuff. Come on, man. There's so much going on over here still, right? So I guess the whole point is you're talking about, okay, go on.
Look at what the entire West Coast did with the legalization. As soon as it became legal, the prices dropped. The Oregon actually stated they wanted to get it down to $1 a gram because it pushed out the black market. So that is great and good because now we can actually have people afford their own medications. That is a similar thing that's going to happen in the CBD market. It's going to continuously get pushed down until people can actually afford their medications. And it's not 30 milligrams. It's not 60 milligrams. You're needing to take hundreds of milligrams per dose in order to get these actual cannabinoids into your body. So we need to keep the proliferation of all the different types of hemp so that way we can keep growing more, so that way we can actually consume it and continue to have it at a price point that people can afford. $36,000 for GW Pharmaceuticals for a year prescription is too much for just anti-seizure medication. I'm thankful for what it does. There's a better way.
Definitely. Yeah. And you talk about dropping prices, lowering prices where people can afford. The problem is that that's what actually sometimes pushes people back to the black market, right? Because the problem is that people can afford it, but the companies that are distributing it or the farmers themselves can't afford it, right? For the prices to be that low because they have to do regulations, right? They have to deal with all kinds of different taxes, all kinds of other things. And if you got this and you're doing the black market, you don't have to pay those extra taxes. You don't have to pay for different applications. You don't have to pay things to be compliant, right? So
all right. So on that note, I don't mean to interrupt, but that's where it's all a lie. It is a large portion of what is this misinformation we're fighting against. Is, I mean, people tell you, we can't turn a profit when it's, you know, 50 cents a point or $5 a pound. Are you kidding me? That's nonsense. That is 9 times the profit margin of cotton. And you're telling me that doesn't work. Yes, there are higher tax brackets. Yes, there's a cost of process. But largely, it's misinformation on the approach that people not necessarily understanding what is the cost of goods sold. How do we get to a finalized product? And if we don't understand that all the way through, whether you're the consumer end, the farmer, or you're the processor, that's when these headaches begin to form, and they affect all of us. And that's where we proliferate a misunderstanding of the value proposition of this crop. You know, even if we are at $1 a pound, right, and we're at 20% of where we are now, and people say, "Oh, that's not effective," there are farmers right now who are looking at that and go, "Hey, that's still twice cotton. That's nothing to sneeze at." So if, as long as we're looking, and this is just for the medical aspect, the cannabinoid approach, if we're looking at all of these differing outputs from a single harvest, we are then approaching a vastly different paradigm where people would be happy over the moon to get a dollar a point for cannabinoids or a dollar a pound for cannabinoid processing. But then you have the fiber, then you have the herb, then you have the grain, and the multiple uses for each one of those therein. But those markets have not been substantiated or proliferated at this point. Yeah. And so you have farmers who are now in Texas looking at this as an option and comparing it to cotton or corn, which is, I mean, both of those crops degrade the soil content. They ensure that year after year you're going to get less and less returns. You know, this crop
and dump more poisons in.
Right. More importantly, you're poisoning now the well from which you draw. So this crop provides an opportunity where we have not seen anything of the like in the last 100 years, 93 years. So, yeah, there is some misconception. People think that it's bottoming out, think that it's going out. But we haven't even touched the iceberg yet. Nevertheless, gotten to the tip of it. So there is a tremendous opportunity. But if you look at it like it's money, that's when we're going to start, you know, getting away from the goal. The goal is to proliferate the growth of this crop. As every single acre we plant of it gives us an extra opportunity, one moment of time, if you will, that enables us more and more as the more acres we grow. If we can get 5.515 million acres grown across domestically U.S., we are then free from the petrol dollar. We no longer have to take on any oil from any other country or ourselves. We can produce all of our needs for energy production that oil has been providing from this crop. We can make the top 6 foot or the top soil more valuable than the mineral rights beneath it.
And I hear what you're saying. I definitely hear what you're saying there. You know, I guess my point is, and to your point, you know, we're talking about how, you know, compared to cotton, right? It's on the lower end things, it's twice as much as cotton. Cotton seems to be doing pretty well for itself, right? But on the other end, right, we don't have to fight against, like we're talking about, 80 years of prohibition, right? And legislators only want to get into this game because they see dollar signs in it, right? They say, oh, sure. Right. We'll legalize it here in this state, or we'll let you be here in this state. We'll let you do this in that state. But guess what? We're going to tax the shit out of you, right? And it's not the same thing that we're dealing with necessarily with cotton, right? So where the margin, where the net may be greater, we're not seeing definitely the, you know, the margin, so to speak. So I guess, you know, that brings my question is, what does it take to have that paradigm shift? We're talking about that paradigm shift, and we're talking about you know, how being able to turn that. You know, we don't want to be in a place where we're being forced to, and we're kind of at that place already now with where we're seeing our earth going. But I guess, what does it take for the paradigm shift to happen and for us to be able to see the greater good and be able to apply it in different areas of our life and being accepting of this and not just looking at it as a way for the state to make more money and we're going to make billions of dollars of revenue and all that fun stuff that goes along with it.
Well, why not have your cake and eat it too, right? So to enable that proliferation, we're talking about the need for infrastructure. You know, all of these differing agricultural products already have infrastructure in place. If hemp were given the same opportunity, we would see a radical, I mean, within 18 months, transition of our baseline goods, whether that be for, you know, cooking materials for human consumption or animal livestock feed, or we're talking about base materials for construction or manufacturing. Are what we're lacking in majority here and is primarily is processing power.
And those many of these other ones,
The bottlenecks are key, you know, transportation across state lines.
Enough. We don't have the proper processes in place yet.
We haven't brought on the bigger players. We don't have enough. So if we can provide proof of concept and show that, hey, yes, you can put a crop in the ground. Yes, it can be used for manufacturing in a multitude of ways. We will see some of these larger players come on the scene. And with them comes the opportunity for us to proliferate more and more acreage to be converted over into growing hemp, which then proliferates the opportunity that hemp brings. It's kind of a chicken before the egg type scenario. We have to prove that it's useful before we can actually use what the crop brings to the table.
And do the start, middle, and end of it simultaneously while building the infrastructure along the way. We've been describing it as building the skyscraper as we go up the staircase.
Yeah, exactly. Like we were saying, right? You know, building it on the way down. You know,
exactly.
Building the parachute after we jump out of the plane, definitely. So I guess That's what we're in, that's what we're doing the process right now. All of us in the industry, right? Very young industry, obviously. And we're kind of, we've got experts
we're
in
growing.
It. Who claim they're experts who are in it, who maybe aren't. And we're just kind of going along as we're moving.
There's more proliferation. There's more people coming online. There's more farmers wanting to get involved. There's more processors wanting to kind of go at this. There's now hedge funds that are kind of paying attention to it. Where we didn't have the money going towards this crop before, we're now seeing investiture going this way. They're trying to push all of these bills through Congress right now, just so that way they can actually come and start throwing money at it. There is so much interest. We're just not there yet. There is a tip of the governmental hand. There is in this industry a us versus the big G, and we are a big fan of overgrowing their concerns.
Oh, definitely. I guess we're still growing, like you said, and we're still moving along. Now, as you said, there's so many people who are coming who want to enter the industry, right? And we're seeing, like I was mentioning earlier, people losing their asses, right? And people kind of coming in and they want things to go a certain way, or they see other going a certain way for other people, or that things were going a certain way a year ago. So they think, great, it's going to be like that now. And as you know, farming in general is finicky, right? It doesn't matter what industry you're in, right? What you're growing, right? So it doesn't mean that just because you're going to grow something, it's going to turn out the way you want it to be, right? During harvest. And if you're betting your entire life on it, we hear horrible stories, right? I talk to people all the time.
Every day.
God forbid, committing suicide, all kinds of different things. They're horrible situations people find themselves in, you know, and with you guys, with Wichita Falls, I know that's what you guys are passionate about, is helping farmers and educating farmers. So what are you guys doing for the farmers, right? You know, we can talk about the big players and all that stuff. And yeah, definitely, we're all waiting for that. Now, how can your normal Joe Schmo, who wants to get into it or is farming something else and now wants to get in this end, how can he also build a skyscraper on the way up?
Something that we provide is we go out them. First off, we don't sugarcoat the information. We tell them brass tacks. We show them the gamble as they're trying to put money on the table. So first off, they need to see it that way.
There's a gamble. Not a sure thing, you're saying.
It's a gamble.
Yeah.
No matter what.
People, they look and they say, great, we're going to make hand over fist right off the bat. You know, and it's not always going to work out like that, unfortunately. You know,
we don't have government subsidies as of yet.
Yeah.
If you are not willing to spend 3 months of your life and then at the end of it, burn it, if you can't do that, don't do this.
Uh-huh. Walk away.
You have to be willing to take that chance. Uh-huh. And we will push everything we can to kind of go the other direction, which is why we come out and we kind of start talking about a site plan. We look at the topography, we take different soil samples, we look what's actually going on with the acreage and actually have an interactive conversation with the individual farmer to figure out what are their needs. We believe that with this particular plant, it's going to be about the individual needs versus just the masses. So it is a micro within a macro. And as this plant goes, it fractals all the way down anyway. So it works.
Yeah. No, farmers are not risk averse. You know, a lot of times, even a risk averse farmer is someone who will be sitting at a blackjack table with the last $20.
Yeah.
You know, farmers, you know, historically are the ones who have relied, at least recently, on insurance because of the unpredictability of the weather. You know, Lloyd's of London last year, they stopped providing insurance for the Midwest because of a 100-year drastic shift in weather. We're just at the tip of this. You know, in Florida, they're seeing it. In Tel Aviv, you're seeing it. You know, y'all had tremendous amounts of rainfall in the last couple of weeks. So we're seeing a world, I know.
And that's where this, you know, the whole area. It's incredible. You know, last few years, people are going, wondering what the hell's going on over here. And now you're just seeing it filling up. You know, the trees are now underwater. It's amazing, you know. So
right. Well, and that's where we see this crop as an opportunity for carbon sequestration, the likes of which there's nothing comparable. We are about to transition here in a mass scale, and that's what we're after. You know, we advise the farmer to pursue it in a manner that says, hey, don't put all your cookies in one basket, right? Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't farm anything you're not willing to lose, and, you know, treat it like a science experiment. Document as much of all the data as you can aggregate it. Make sure that you not only share, because as we were talking earlier, you know, sometimes you can run into a problem, but sometimes you can learn from another running into that same problem. So if we have all of these guys aggregating our data, then it will enable farmers to accurately plan for what their acreage will be able to produce. and it'll give them a more firm understanding of how to move forward in this risky market. And if we ensure proliferation of accurate information, we are of the belief that, you know, truth will out, that the good guys will win as long as we keep to the idea, the mentality, that we give them every opportunity we can. So that's what we're out here doing, is advising farmers, hey, you know, mitigate your risk. If you have the option, take insurance. Here are a couple good players. Make sure you have an idea for an outlet for your crop, whether that be a market, and well, yeah, verified market, whether that be, you know, you're going to be selling for grain, or you're going to be selling for biodiesel, or you're going to be selling for base product or cannabinoids, or you're going to be going for a mixture of therein. Make sure you have an exit plan, if not the buyer, in mind before you put seed in the ground. And make sure you take into account as many caveats for the acreage that you're going to be growing on, whether that be the soil content, whether that be the moisture of your area, the irrigation requirements, or, you know, a number of other things that are easily foreseeable. As long as we are able to ensure that the farmer is thinking this through and counting the cost of building this wall, then we have an opportunity. And that's what we're going after here, is just proliferating the opportunity.
Oh, that's good stuff. Now, are you... is it something that you guys are doing there just for farmers locally, or across Texas, or outside of Texas, across the country? Or tell me, you know, who are the people that you guys are working with a lot?
I started on the national front. I came back home to Texas. We're working on the Texas front. We'll expand back out. But right now, we got to get Texas online.
Yeah, we're focusing on Texas. That being said, we've done work in Colorado, Oregon, you know, we consulted for some other folks and a couple other places, Oklahoma, as well as some guys on the East Coast. But primarily our focus is Texas. We want to ensure that this is an agricultural environment that, you know, proliferates this crop above all else. So I apologize, gentlemen, but I have to hop off. But Chris would be more than happy to continue.
Well, let's wrap up. I think we have just a couple minutes left here. Just a second.
Sorry to abrupt.
Oh, no, it's all good. It's all good. So cool. So, you know, what have been your biggest challenges with Wichita Falls, and how you guys have been able to overcome it?
Well, it's an everyday moving on, continuous path forward. We are trying to turn one mind at a time and trying to do it en masse. But as time goes on, we'll continuously move that way. It is just moving out from a stigma. It is a thing that people are discovering on their own, and also a thing that we are trying to put in front of them accurate information so that way they can see going forward. We have a city that is an entrepreneurial mindset, so we believe that they are going to come around rather quickly as we continue to grow.
Very good. And Adam, before you run, what does success look like to you? How would you define success?
How do I define success? Enabling our brothers for a higher quality of living while not damaging or stealing from anybody else's bowl. You know, the only time we should be looking in somebody else's bowl is to make sure they have enough. And far too often we see it's quite the opposite. You know, people trying to take from another. And this crop provides an abundant lifestyle, one that is far drastically different than any other. So what is success? Success to me would be driving down the road and not having to come into contact with someone that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that we could help. You know, I want to provide an environment for my kiddos to grow up in that is the hope of a future brighter than the current, instead of looking back on the past and dreaming of yesteryear. That's what success looks like to me, is building a brighter future. And then this crop is how we do that.
Amazing. So cool. Adam, I'll let you run, and we're going to jump back in a minute here, Chris, to wrap it up. Thanks for joining me today, Adam. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. God bless. Thank you, Chris.
God bless, man. Only good things.
Amen. Bye-bye.
So great. So Chris, cool. And what does success look like for you? How do you define success?
Well, we find that the fastest way to the king's throne is through the servant's entrance. We try to grow servant leadership. We try to build servant leadership. And if we could just multiply the efforts and the teachings that really point back towards vertical thinking, I believe that that is success. All glory goes up at the end of it.
Definitely. Yeah, it's that's the whole thing, right? Being able to spread it and helping others, and create different leadership, right? The same thing, you know. A real leader doesn't create followers. A real leader creates other leaders. Well, as we close here, how can listeners find out more about you, find about Adam, find about Wichita Falls, Texas Hemp Company, and connect with you?
Well, we have a real simplistic website. It's WFTHC.com, which is Wichita Falls, Texas Hemp Company, abbreviated. On there, we have two videos. First one made by the U.S. government, 1941, Hemp for Victory. And then the second one is Hemp for Victory 73 years later. So it really kind of gives you a showcase of the past and a showcase of what's currently kind of going on. And really, I would like to encourage people to figure out what their passions are, because if they can contact me and talk about their passions, we can start talking about how to vertically integrate them. We would love to kind of see everyone. I kind of look at it as a clock. You're going to have big cogs, you're going to have little cogs, but it's going to take all of us kind of working harmoniously within each other, so that way we can create the throughput, which will be the industry going forward. So right now we are trying to build a skeleton. Eventually we will get muscles onto it and eventually close and making it look pretty. Right now it is a get it done mentality.
Very good, very good. Very excited then. So what can we expect from y'all in the future?
Oh gosh, I have no idea. See, every single time we run into a situation, we go after the farmer and just whoever says help. And then we jump into that help scenario and try to find permanent solutions and then be able to take that with us to the next time someone says help about that. So my entire journey, I've spent the last 5 years on the road with my wife. I've had over 1,000 different jobs learning all these different skill sets just so I can put pieces together. And I really want to put pieces together for other people's lives. I really desire for my life to be dedicated to more of a servant mentality and doing that servant leadership. And I believe that that's the way forward.
That's it, baby. That's it. We got to help others. Got to be there. And how can we help? How can we be of service to others? I think that's the key to
that's
foundation.
The first question.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, good. Well, thank you again for joining me today, Chris, Natum. Really appreciate you. Really appreciate your insight. And actually really, really enjoyed what you had to share about the different paradigm shift that we're entering now, and definitely gave us a lot to think about. So good luck to you today, the rest of 2020 and beyond.
Appreciate it.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis marketing, branding, and web design. If you're a cannabis entrepreneur and you know you need an uptake in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us. Plans start at $248. Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com. That's CalacanN.com, and follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.